Hello, this is Patrick from The Fundamental Principle. We're going to read something a little bit different today. We're going to do the letter to the Pope on his visit to Auschwitz by Leon de Grel. How you doing, Drome?
I'm well, man. Thanks for having me back. And this one's a good one. It's relatively short, and we both got a lot going on, so rather than do a big, long, lengthy reading, we thought we'd just do this real quick. I was telling Patrick before we started to record that this is what convinced me that the Hollow Bongo was fake. This great man, this hero, to ignore everything, like, I couldn't. I was convinced. So, in the interest of like sharing that knowledge with everybody, I thought we could read it.
So we can kind of back up and do the history of Leon de Grel. He started a Catholic party. Was it the
Rexus?
Yep. Yeah. The Rexus. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, he started a Catholic. People tend to forget this, and I've had to bring this up multiple times. But like, there were Christian, anti-communist, anti-capitalist movements in every major country in Europe.
And this was, and he was adopted because of his starting of this party. He was adopted as a high ranking, or is it high up in the SS Waffe? The Waffe.
Yeah, well, he joined at like in his 30s, to, you know, because he'd been a journalist and a political leader and a newspaper man, and then he joined the SS to prove his commitment, and fought the communists, won multiple. Multiple Iron Crosses. So let's just read it. He talks a little bit about, you know, the biography in the opening to the letter, but you know, this is here you see like the clarity of a man who was truly educated in faith versus like John Paul II, his personalism. And it, like, you know, I was raised to really like worship JB2, but his writing's terrible, man. The philosophical personalism and the abstruseness of it, and it's just not good. It's just not good versus this, you know. Letter to the Pope on his visit to Auschwitz by Leon de Grel in exile, 20th May 1979, to His Holiness Pope John Paul II, the Vatican City. Most Holy Father, I'm Leon de Grel, and I was leader of the Belgian Rexus, the Rexus movement, before the Second World War. During the war, I was a commander of the Belgian Volunteers on the Eastern Front and fought in the 28th Walloon Division of the Waffen-SS. This will certainly not be regarded as a recommendation by everyone. I am, however, a Catholic, like you, and I believe that I am entitled to write to you as a brother in the faith. I am concerned by announcement to the in the press that during your coming visit to Poland, from 20th or 2nd to 12th June 1979, you're going to celebrate a mass with all the Polish bishops at the former concentration camp of Auschwitz. Let me say straight away that I find it very edifying to pray for the dead, whatever they may, wherever they may be, wherever they may be, and at any place, even in front of brand new crematory ovens with their immaculate fire bricks. Even so, I am apprehensive. The fact of being Polish and your adherence to this loyalty ceaselessly appears in your pontifical behavior. It is human. You are a patriot who participated very deeply in your youth in a tough bellicose conflict. If old resentments made too strong an impression on you, however, you may be tempted to take part, having now become Pope, in secular quarrels in which history still has not officially clarified. Oh, no, sufficiently clarified, pardon me. What responsibility, for example, did the various belligerents have for the outbreak of the Second World War? What role did certain instigators play? Everyone knows that your Prime Minister, Colonel Beck, was a rather dubious individual. Did he act with the requisite degree of level-headedness in 1939? Did he not reject with undue arrogance certain chances of reaching an accommodation in 1939 with the German government? What about later on? Was the war really as it has been described? Were the faults or even the crimes of both sides? Has it, their respective aims always been evaluated objectively? Has not enemy doctrine been misrepresented even through failing to give it proper consideration, or deliberately became propaganda demanded it? Were not plans attributed to the enemy and acts assumed to have taken place, whose real existence has never been substantiated? The church has always been much better informed than anyone else. For 2,000 years, however, it had a policy of circumspection, and it has always avoided taking up precipitous positions. It has only ever set out to judge from evidence, and to do so in a calm manner, when it has time sorted out the rages and passions, and the wheat from the chaff, or wheat from the tares. It's ironic, because that was the gospel today, wasn't it? In particular, it was conspicuous for extreme restraint during the Second World War. It was carefully guarded not to peddle the lunatic speculation prevalent at the time. When you were on your native soil, Most Holy Father, and particularly at Auschwitz, where you may perhaps be reactivated by certain incomplete and partisan mental visions of the past, are you simply going to pray? I fear above all that your prayers, and even simply your presence in such places, may be immediately diverted from their profound significance and used as a smokescreen by unscrupulous propagandists who will employ them to relaunch the hate campaigns under your cover. These campaigns are based on lies and have poisoned the whole subject of Auschwitz for more than a quarter of a century. Now this is
so I do. I'm going to kind of inject my anti-Polish sentiment, and it's Poles have a history of, if you're listening to Pete Kunenes's 200 Years Together, which I have heavily recommend everybody does. The first couple sections of the book talks about how involved the Jews were in Polish society. So for hundreds of years, 800 something years, that Jews just lived commonplace in Poland. You know, if you're around people long enough, you start to act like each other. Right. Was it Yaki that came, I forget Yaki's, I think it was Yaki, his philosophy around like the melting of spirits like that, or the melting of people like that. But you know, it's the idea of a Polak not going along with anything a Jew says or anything
well, and by your fruits, right? Like, yeah. It hasn't worked well. You know, there's a reason that there are Polak jokes. That they're just not the brightest people on earth. Sorry. Yes. I mean lies. The legend of the massive exterminations at Auschwitz is exploited the collective psychosis, which, owing to uncontrolled gossip, had unhinged numerous World War II internees. Since 1945, the whole world has been assailed by this legend. Hundreds of lies have been repeated in thousands of books in an increasingly virulent rage. They are produced in full color and apocalyptic films, which are outrageous in the way they flay out not only truth and probability, but common sense, the most elementary arithmetic, and the facts themselves. I have been told, Most Holy Father, that you were in the resistance during the Second World War. With all the physical risks entailed in a form of warfare contrary to international law, some add that you were interned at Auschwitz. Like so many others, you left it, since here you are a pope who, from all the evidence, did not smell much like on B gas, having been on the spot. Your Holiness, you must know better than anyone else that the mass gatherings of millions of people never took place. Sectarian propagandists hark back so much to these great collective massacres, but you, as a prime witness, personally, see just one being carried out? People have certainly suffered at Auschwitz, but others have suffered too. All wars are cruel. Hundreds of thousands of women and children were horribly carbonized under the direct orders of the Allied heads of state. At least as many bought it at Dresden or Hamburg or at Hiroshima or Nagasaki as suffered or sometimes died in the concentration camps of the Third Reich's Of the internees, 25% were political or members of the resistance, and 75% were conscientious objectors, sexual perverts, or common criminals.
You know, this is
that last. Go ahead.
Sorry, we're cutting each other off. But like, he talks about Zyklon B gas, and it's like it's delouser. It's, you know.
Yeah, there was typhus, and it killed thousands of people.
But it, like, but that's in every war that with internment camps. Is you're just going to have disease and like the trench foot.
It happened in the war between the states. Look at it with Andersonville prison in the United States, like during the American Civil War, like camp fevers carried off more people than died in combat in not only in the First World War, but also even in Civil War, like until recently, like the 20th century, the latter half of the 20th century, like until antibiotics, like you get large groups of people together and diseases spread like wildfire and they kill tens of thousands of people. That's just what happens. And
this has been going on for all of humanity. Like tons of like the largest issue that the medieval kings had was supporting the war camps, like the cooks, the medics, just keeping things like they had an idea of sanitation, but like just keeping things clean is nearly impossible with mobilized armies.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. 10,000 people got to use a bathroom. That's one division. You got 50 divisions. What are you going to do? But like, and you know, this is 75% for conscientious objectors, 70 perverts, or common criminals. How many of the priests who were in these camps were subversives?
And that makes you uncomfortable to hear. Think about like a guy like James Martin. He'd be you'd be put in Dachau.
And yeah,
you can read any of like the church militant stuff, whatever you want to say about Michael Voris, this, that, the other. He did good work. You know, he's, you know, honest as he could be. You know, but like all of the priests he talks about and all the clergy he talks about in the church militant letters, like these people would be arrested. You know, you illegalize homosexuality. What are you going to do with like gay people that don't want to stop? You have
going out with kids,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do with regular criminals that just, that won't stop breaking the law?
You throw them in prison or you execute them. Like, that's it.
Like, there's no other options. Just because they're wearing a cassock doesn't put them above the law. At what point in history was a priest, a bishop, or a cardinal above the law? And that's uncomfortable here, I know. But it's like, we got to separate the man from the office. Like, just because they're you know, a shepherd of the Lord doesn't mean that we can't fall in sin. Doesn't mean we can't break the law.
And indeed, they should be held to a higher standard than normal people. And scriptures itself say that they should be held to a higher standard. Like, why are we even... To continue, exhaustion used to eat them up. The collapse of morale would eliminate the weaker souls. The cruelties of some guards, which were inevitable in any prison-type systems, further added the bitterness of the loss of individual privacy from having so many people crowded together. Some of these guards were Germans. More often than not, they were non-Germans, capos, and other internees who had become the torturers of their companions. These must also have been some depraved individuals who originated in one camp or another, novel ways of killing people, tortures, monstrous whims, and summary murders. Despite all the above, the cavalry of the majority of the exiles would have come to an end in the joy of a long-awaited day of return to peace, had not the catastrophe of epidemics such as typhus, which killed many thousands, befallen them in the last weeks. These epidemics were infinitely increased by the incredible bombings which severed the railway lines and roads and sent boats loaded with refugees straight to the bottom, as at Lübeck. These raids annihilated the electrical network, the water pipes, and the reservoirs, cut off all revictualing, imposed famine everywhere, and rendered all transport of evacuees appalling. Two-thirds of the internees who died during the Second World War perished in this time. victims of typhus, dysentery, starvation, and of the interminable delays in the pulverized channels of communication. This was established by the official figures at Dachau, for example, following the same statistics of the International Committee. 54 internees died in January 1944 and 100 in February 1944. In 1945, however, 2,888 died in January and 3,997 in February. Of the total of 25,613 internees who died in the camp in 1940, 41, 42, 43, 44, and 45, and 45, 19,296 perished during the last 7 months of the 7 months of hostilities. At the time, the aeroterrorism of the Allies no longer even seemed a military purpose, since Allied victory had been assured in the beginning of 1945. It no longer required this last dreadful pulping in any way. And not only that, but like indiscriminate bombing and just like strafing of like that's something that they just did. You know, the Americans and the Russians are responsible, and the British are responsible for all these deaths, not the Germans. And here's an eyewitness who was on the Eastern Front.
What military has ever focused on killing of civilians? Combat.
80th anniversary of Dresden was 2 days ago. What's the point of that?
There's no military bases near Dresden.
It was literally just a cultural center, and tens of thousands of people were evacuated there. And yep, and they turned the roads melted. People literally like scenes out of hell. It's the only way you can describe it. The people like caught in the road, like in tar pits. Like it's. Anyway, I gotta finish this. I'm gonna get too upset.
But also, I want to leave you with this note before you continue. Why would they bomb the Cologne Cathedral so many times? Was it 106 times they bombed the Cologne Cathedral?
Yeah, most beautiful church in Germany.
What reason? Is it because they were hiding bombs in the basement like Hamas does Palestine? Could it be the same reason?
Yeah, they were hiding bombs right under the relics of the three kings.
Okay. Yeah. No. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Without the savage folly of these blind poundings, thousands of internees would have survived instead of being converted into macabre exhibits in April and May of 1945. Swarms of press and films, carrion beetles, posted about these exhibits, greedy for photos and films. Were all taken sensational angles and were an assured commercial yield. They still went to the trouble later on retouching, superimposing, distorting, and faking these vital documents in order to add finishing touches to the horror, which produced even more hatred. Billy Wilder, the Jewish film director of such films as Some Like It Hot, guess where he was at this time? Doing this. The information artists could just have easily taken miles of similar film to the bodies of German women and children, except that they are 100 times more numerous. They had died in exactly the same way, from hunger and then from cold, or machine gun in the same frozen flat wagons and in the same blood-stained roads. But as with the photos of the immense extermination of German towns, which had buried 600,000 bodies, care was taken not to make such pictures known. They might have caused disquiet and, above all, prevented hatred. The truth is that in 1945, typhus, dysentery, hunger, and the nervous blasting of an unchecked air force hit foreign internees and the civilians of the Third Reich indiscriminately. They were both matched by abominations of a type resembling those at the end of the world. As for the rest, Most Holy Father, the assertions about an explicit plan for genocide, in particular the alleged entombing of millions of Jews in phantom Zyklon B gas chambers at Auschwitz, has been buried and hurl or been hurled and hurled again and a crippled din for so many years. They do not, however, stand up to the slightest serious scientific examination. In 30 years, not a single document has been able to furnish the slightest official proof. That's still true today. It is ridiculous to imagine, and above all, to pretend that 24,000 people could have been gassed at Auschwitz each day in batches of 3,000 at a time in a room of 400 cubic meters. Still less could this have been happened in batches of 700 or 800 in buildings with a floor space of 25 square meters and a height of 1.9 meters has been claimed in regards to Belzec. 25 square meters is equivalent to the floor space of a bedroom. Would you succeed, Most Holy Father, in putting 700 or 800 people in your bedroom? 700 to 800 people on 25 square meters works out to 30 people a square meter. A square meter, 1.9 meters high, is the size of a telephone box. Can you picture, Your Holiness, 30 people piling into a telephone box in St. Peter's Square or in the Great Seminary of Warsaw or on a simple shower stand? It's the miracle of 30 human bodies packed like asparagus on the goldfish bowl of a telephone box, or one of the 800 people crowded around your camp bed, has ever been realized, and a second miracle would have been immediately indispensable. Otherwise, the 3,000 people, the equivalent of two regiments, crammed together so fantastically in the Auschwitz chamber, or the 700 to 800 people piled up at Belzec on account of having been 30 occupants in the square meter, would have perished almost immediately, as they would have been asphyxiated from the lack of oxygen. I mean, it just, you know, this was 1979, when the church had kind of given up the ghost on rigorous canonization processes. But just apply the skepticism toward, you know, towards the canonization of like Joan of Arc versus this stuff. And it just falls apart.
Also, like, the church has a history of sending inquisitors to events that seem questionable, more of moral question. And I don't believe they did it with Auschwitz. I don't believe there's any scientists. No. But, like, they did it when rumors are coming out about Christopher Columbus being indecent to natives. The church did a full investigation on it.
Yeah, you can still buy the book today.
So it's just odd to me that with the questions of genocide, especially in the last 80 years, that the church seems to be absent.
Yeah, worth pointing out. There would not have been even any need for gas. For one had finished piling up the last arrivals, bolting from the doors and dropping the gas into the room, most would have already stopped breathing. Zyklon B would have only reached only corpses. This gas was supposedly either dropped into the room through slits, through holes by chimney, or in the form of hot air as a vapor, or was discharged along the ground, as you can take your pick. As anyone interested in science can tell you, Zyklon B was in any case inflammable, adhesive, and dangerous to use. A 21-hour wait would consequently have been necessary, even indispensable, before the first corpses was pulled out of the wondrous chamber. Editor's note, had the German authorities planned such a method of extermination, they undoubtedly would have used non-toxic gas, such as nitrogen, to asphyxiate them. As had been related to us with great pleasure by a thousand spicy details, one would have to have been able to extract all the gold teeth and all the filled teeth, the latter being prudent hiding places for diamonds. This would supposedly have been done each batch of 6,000 rigid jaws, 3,000 people, which each death drawn together, and 48,000 jaws each day, if one believes the official figure of 24,000 gassed every day in Auschwitz alone. As holy as you are, Most Holy Father, you must be more or less resigned to endure the dentist sometimes. Have you ever had a tooth extracted, or two teeth? When this occurs, one is on best terms with the dentist who is operating. He has a potent mirrors, trained on the jaws, ideal instruments, and a patient who consents to his instructions or his injunctions. Now, how long does the extraction take under these optimal conditions? A quarter of an hour? Half an hour? According to legend, the fell corpses at Auschwitz were lying on the ground and are necessary and just extend the hardened jaws, which was done with much difficulty, relax them, and then open them wide, all with the necessary primitive instruments. According to the official figures, there were only 8 operatives to skim the cement without lightning, and thus to scrupulize 1 bad spot in the teeth and 2 entire jaws. They had then to extract, dissect, and empty teeth, all in less than time than a perfectly equipped specialist. What is holiness, so please take a...
I do want to make a comment that, you know, we're given to this information about the Holocaust at such a young age. What, second grade is when it starts?
Yeah, probably.
So you're 8, 9, 10 years old? Right. You know, you don't have any ability to think rationally at that point. So, you know, you're trauma bonded to the story of these Jews just having these horrible experiences. And it just, you barely can think right at an 8-year-old, or having any ability to rationalize or like, you know, stop back and like, hey, could this be real? No, you trust your teachers and their authority. And it's, you know, how many people as an adult revisit this and just read back through, you know, personal statements.
Right. Would His Holiness please take a pencil? At a quarter of an hour per jaw, with 8 desperate drawers engaged in the dissection that makes 16 bodies to deal with in an hour, 160 in a working day of 10 hours without a minute's rest. If even one was a stankovite of dentistry and one doubled the rate of extraction, which is to say one physically impossible, it would make 320. Well then, Most Holy Father, what are the batches of 3,000 Jews in one go? What about the days when 24,000 were gassed by Zyklon B? That meant 48,000 jaws to deal with and more than 760,000 teeth to scrutinize daily. Simply confining oneself to the 6 million dead Jews, which propaganda ceaselessly repeats to us over and over again, some has doubled or tripled the figure, those drawers would still have been in full operation for years after the war. These extractions and these alone, with 10 hours of uninterrupted labor, would have taken up to 1,875 working days of the whole team. So that's 5 years.
But he brings up the 6 million Jews themselves. But what about that seems to fall along. That seems to be the prominent thing. But what about the other 5 million people that died on the side? Was it 11 million? I don't remember.
Yeah. That. Well, they.
How many people they claimed in all the camps? I can't remember the official. I think it's 11 million. But like, they do this to the Jews, and then the other people that just kind of like, oh, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I continue here. But these extractions were only a preliminary formality, as appears that it is also necessary to crop millions of heads of hair. Then, according to what all historians of Auschwitz affirm, ex cathedra, all the nutrients and wombs were examined before the bodies were passed to the ovens. This was in order to receive the diamonds and pieces of jewelry which might have been in the depths of these nooses and wombs to flinch. Can you imagine it, Most Holy Father? 6 million anuses and 3 of 4 million wombs to scour from top to bottom, then it being explained to us that at the end of the massive gassings that the bodies were steamed with excrement, menstrual blood, and dressing, the finger stand hands off of the operatives would have had to grope in these foul organs in order to locate the hidden diamonds, take out sticky, wash them and wash themselves 24,000 times a day for the anuses and 15 to 20,000 times a day for the wombs. It is absolutely mad. The whole business is crazy, and we have had not to mention the complementary activities, the manufactured of fertilizer, the cakes of soap, in which certain people, like the raving Professor Polskova, had without flinching. These gassings, croppings, and extractions, the organ scouring would supposedly repeal a 6 million Jews, or on 7 million, according to Father Riquet, on 15 million, or according to the Laus Dictionary of 20 million, more than the number of Jews in the whole world. If that was necessary to accept the official claims of the manipulation of history of Auschwitz as correct, these operatives would still be continuing. We could still hold, you could still hold your nose near the gas chambers, Most Holy Father, and still precite from the heat of Auschwitz ovens during your celebrated mass.
If the numbers of real and natural deaths at Auschwitz have been multiplied by 10 or 20, the swindle could have maintained a certain aspect of verisimilitude. But as for the gassings of 700 or 800 people per bedroom, too much lying ends up looking grotesque. Only the unfathomable and unimaginable stupidity of fools can explain how much, so much nonsense could be invented, related, proclaimed with great trumpet, blast filmed in extraordinary barrage and believed. I believe some angels bravely declared about the Holocaust everything I've been told. What an exemplary admission. When is the mass can celebrate at Auschwitz, all hearts will be gripped by love of God and man and participate in a renewal of the sacrifice. How can one imagine for a minute, Most Holy Father, that a priest, a pope, who could screen waves of such stupid hatred and such extravagant lies under his pallium at the very moment he elevated the chalice to heaven? Such hatred and lies are the complete opposite of the touching teaching of Christ. No, certainly not. But it is just not possible. 100 paces from Auschwitz fake gas chamber, your message can only be one of charity, fraternity, and equally one of truth, without which all doctrines collapse. You are going to Auschwitz in order to be moved and to contemplate one of the high places of human suffering. The causes of that suffering and those responsible will be determined objectively with time by serene history. They will not be determined by resounding to forced confessions or the digressions of false witnesses. Editor's note. And what are the enormous amount of energy required to reduce 6 million bodies to ash after gassing or dust after gassing?
So I do want to make a comment, and please, listener, put my racial bias aside. But like if you're at this point, you understand the histories of the Jews. What kind of person would want to be their fraternal brother? What kind of man would you have to be? Like, these people are awesome. Like, what would you have to go through in your life? Like, even the Jews that I've dealt with in my probably, they just are slimy people, and you're like, no, these people are my friend. I've dealt with, you know, Jews from the big businessmen to the guy who owns the deli down the street, and it's, I haven't really liked them all at all. Just my personal experience, my personal life. You know, please take my biases aside. But it's just, to me, it's odd.
I've never had a positive experience with one either. So, I mean, yeah. So, the Pope is above these affrays. He is closer to the souls who have suffered and who, by suffering, have risen spiritually. For there is no purgatory, cavalry of death, which cannot become sublime. Sacrifice, physical and mental suffering and anguish have caused great flourishings of the soul to spring up in lives which might normally have remained mediocre. This happened everywhere in the battlefields of the Second World War, where so many soldiers fell after immense sufferings, as much as in the work camps, where numerous people died, victims of conflicts which overtook and crushed them. Such was the case at Auschwitz, and such was the case on the Eastern Front throughout the years of struggle and sacrifice by millions of young Europeans who, from 1941 to 1945, faced the communist onslaught. Does this man write like a monster, or does he write like a soul of a poet? I have to recommend everyone read his wonderful book, Burning Souls. But listen to this man's writing and tell me who's lying.
I mean, there's no animosity in this at all. Sure, he's talking to a pontiff, but like this is, I'm not picking up any bias.
Well, you can hear the ring of truth in it, you know, and everything John Paul II wrote was like just obscurantist and poorly written and constantly trying to make square the circle of like his own insane philosophical personalism and like the modern world. And I don't know, like it's just an amazing contrast. But let's finish up this page here. We're about halfway through here. Atrocity had certainly been committed throughout the entire history of man. Auschwitz, at any rate, was not the first and will not be the last. We're seeing that only too well at the moment when so many defenseless women and children are being massacred in the Palestinian camps. They are being reduced to pulp by the Israeli Air Force, which is making the law of retaliation rebound to innocent people whose memory, unfortunately, and can celebrate their mass will never be sung. Powerful people who have abused their power hundreds of times, nations that have lost their heads, not just in one particular, but in all of them, alongside millions of pure and unselfish hearts who offer their youth in an ideal Germany has had, like everyone else, its share of detestable beings guilty of inadmissible violence. But what country has not? Did not the France of the French Revolution invent the terror, the guillotines, and the executions by drowning in the Loire? Napoleon did not intern people, but he did forcibly enlist hundreds of thousands of civilian occupied countries who were sent to die for his glory. There were 51,000 just from Belgium. That is to say, more Belgians than perished in the First World War or the concentration camps of the Third Reich. Near our own time, in 1944 and 1945, did a certain Gallic preside over the massacre of tens of thousands of opponents who had been dubbed collaborators. More recently still, in Indochina and Algeria, did not France cram hundreds of thousands of people into extremely tough concentration camps where sadists were not lacking? Did not these people include not only the rebellious and those who refused to submit, but hostages and ordinary civilians rounded up in large numbers? A French general even made public eulogy of torture. And what about Britain with its bombardment of unfortified cities like Copenhagen, its execution of sepoys tied to the mouths of cannons, its crushing of the Boers, its Transvaal concentration camps where thousands of women and children perished in indescribable misery? And what of Churchill unleashing his abominable terror bombings on civilian populations of the Reich, which burnt them in their cellar, annihilated about 200,000 with phosphorus and women and children in one night in the gigantic crematory of Dresden. I use the word 11 about because it is only an approximation estimate could made by calculating the weight of its ashes. What about the United States?
If you hate Germans, okay, I understand that you're Polish, you're listening, you hate Germans, this, whatever. You're European, you have your racial, we have a few French listeners, whatever. You have a racial animosity towards Germans. But you're Catholic. You're listening to the show. Dresden was a Catholic city.
Yep.
I think that tends to get lost in like the memes and the historical. Dresden was a Bavarian Catholic city. So it's like you're wishing, regardless of history and racial animosity, you're wishing Catholics to be firebombed. Yeah.
Yeah, it was terrible. What about the United States? Did it not rise to power thanks to the frightful slavery of millions of blacks who were branded like animals and thanks to the almost complete annihilation of the Red Indians who had been the original owners of the coveted territory? Was it not the dispenser of the atomic bomb in 1945, even yesterday? Did it not number undoubted tortures among its troops in Vietnam? And if we not even dwelt on the tens of millions of victims of the tyranny of the USSR or in the present state gulags, I strongly fear that no one will breathe a word about them at the time of your next visit to the restored Auschwitz camp, which has in itself been void of occupants for decades. No one will deny that life at Auschwitz was hard and sometimes very cruel. In the camps of the victors of 1945, however, the sadists and the torturers had quickly come to blossom in equal numbers. They did so, moreover, with less excuse if one accepts that the World War was capable of providing excuses. I would not like you to spoil, Most Holy Father, the pleasures which you are going to have in recovering, rediscovering your country. Even so, I must point out the following. You have been keen to demonstrate the moral elevation of your valiant native land to best advantage by glorifying its admirable patron, St. Stanislaus. Has your native land, however, been also known at times to be of crime and business, baseness. When you come to read the Polish soul of Auschwitz, which is so evocative of the last Jewish tragedy, would it be improper, if one wanted to be fair, to recall the innumerable other Jews who were earlier put to death in horrible programs which occurred right across your country for centuries? These Jews were tortured, had their throats slit, were hanged by your fellow countrymen, though Catholics. They have not always been any more angelic. I can still hear the Apostolic Nuncio at Brussels telling me at his excellent table how the Polish peasants used to crucify Jews on the doors of their barns. He had previously been nuncio at Warsaw and was to be the future Cardinal Mikara. Those Jew pigs, the unctuous prelate would exclaim, as the spirit which hastily reflected the Gospels, believe me, these words were spoken to me just like that. Was the church herself, Most Holy Father, always so tender? Even in the mid-18th century, it still used to burn Jews with great pomp and ceremony, especially right in the middle of town of Madrid. The church, however, used to burn them alive. The Inquisition was not a sheepfold. The massacres of the 10 Albigensians were perpetuated on the ages of St. Thomas Aquinas. The massacre of St. Bartholomew's Eve was joy and heart's delight of the Pope, your predecessor, who rose the dead that night to celebrate the happy event with an enthusiastic Te Deum. He even arranged to commemorate by striking a medal. And what about the 30,000 so-called witches who were burnt at the stake throughout Christendom? Even in the last century, the papacy was still enforcing the ghetto at Rome. Essentially, Most Holy Father, we are worth very little. Be we Pope or Ayatollah, Parisians or Prussians, Soviets or New Yorkers, there's nothing to glorify in unduly. We have been in our bad moments as savage as one another. The fact that we are all on a par does not justify anything or anybody, but nevertheless oblige us not to hand out excommunications or absolutions with too much impetuosity or benevolence. Human savagery will only be driven back by answering hatred with fraternity. Hate disarms itself as everything disarms itself, not by being endlessly served up again with ever sharper sauces, nor by being exacerbated, as the case of Auschwitz, with a lot of lunatic exaggerations, lies, and false confessions. The latter have been stacked with screaming contradictions and were extracted by torture and terror in both Soviet and American jails. In the hideous era of Nuremberg, they were just the same. Some were people might have been thought the freebooters of the concentration camps, exhibitionism, and the forgery, who have turned the 6 million Jews into the most renowned financial swindle of all the century, were last going to put an end to this exploitation. An imposing religious ceremony, however, is going to unfurl itself in your presence and the fake set at Auschwitz's stage. Thanks to all its pomp, a strong attempt is going to be made by means of gigantic barrage from television and the press to turn you into an unquestioned endorser of the checks of hatred. Your name is worth its weight in gold to all these gangsters. As if the first Holocaust was not enough, the whole world is going to be thus for the Holocaust number two. It will cost $1,000 million this time, since your holiness will have furnished brazen producers with all the most surreptitious extras for absolutely nothing.
So I misspoke earlier. Dresden is in Upper Saxony. It's not a Bavarian city, but still Catholic nonetheless. I wanted to correct myself with that. So this is written in the 70s. But Leon Degrelle himself sees the sainthood of the Holocaust replacing Christ.
Bishop Williamson talked about it. He was right. And let me finish here, and we can. Whatever its circulation or impact amongst the dupes may have been, Holocaust number one was nothing but a gigantic Hollywood racket of rare vulgarity, It was above all aimed at emptying the pockets of hundreds of millions of ill-informed viewers. Its damage could only be temporary. However, for one could soon have been forced to note the farcical nature of extravagances, it would not stand up to the conscientious examination of a historian. On the other hand, most likely, Father, this Holocaust of yours will be produced with great ceremony at Auschwitz itself. It will be done by a pope present in the flesh and blood, dressed in all its pontifical majesty, and anointed with truthfulness. In the eyes of Christendom, hoaxed by sacrilegious manipulators, this Holocaust number two, with a pope facing the sacred altar strongly, runs the risk of appearing to be a quasi-divine confirmation of all the propaganda hatched by hate-mongers and usurers. This will be especially so at the time of the crack sacrifice. Your evocation of the war in front of the Polish tombs at Monte Cassino has already disturbed many of the faithful. If one is to be believed that the press said at the time, you appear to have retained only certain fragmentary and partisan aspects of it. Your ostentatious appearance at Auschwitz, Most Holy Father, can only disturb even more of them, for there's no doubt that you are going to be taken for a ride, as the popular saying goes. It is obvious. The religious ceremony, certainly at the moment of the constellation, may seem to your mind to be a purely an appeal for reconciliation of men to replace at last men's hatred. The freebooters of the press and screen, however, have firmly decided to make you dive miter first and on your brand new white cassock into the yawning trap of Auschwitz. Homo homini lupus, say the sectarians. Homo homini fratos, says every Christian who is not a hypocrite. We are all brothers. The internee suffering behind his barbed wire and the haggard soldier on edge behind his submachine gun. All of us who survived until 1945 must pardon and must love. You, the persecuted person who has become pope. I, the warrior who has become persecuted. And the millions of human beings who all lived through the immense tragedy of the Second World War with our ideals, our man, our weakness, and our faults. Life does not have any other meaning. God does not have any other meaning. Well, what else matters in the end? In spite of the spiritual rudeness or imprudishness that might be involved with the Pope taking positions in unsettled historical debates, and in spite of the hate-filled fanatics who will exploit the dramatic nature of your epic without delay, I will, from the remoteness of my distant exile, add my devotion to you in the day you celebrate your Mass at Auschwitz. I am Most Holy Father, fully yours, Leon de Grel. And that, in 6 pages, he demolishes the whole thing. How can anybody defend this after that?
Yeah, only the uneducated and the bigoted. Which is, I mean, it's fine. Like, if you like can read this and be like, this is, he's just lying with an agenda. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. I don't know what to say. Like, other than, like, you're not engaging with reality.
No, you're not. And who was there, right? But, you know, the fruits of Leon de Grel is friends and compatriots for, you know, this was 1980, basically. So 45 years ago, 46 years ago, half a century on. And people love him still. John Paul II's been dead barely 20 years. And, you know, he was canonized as a saint immediately because in 100 years, no one will care what he has to say about anything. Because he, by buying into all of these, all this modernism, all this new religion, he destroyed the church by appointing men like Bergoglio and McCarrick Cardinal, John Paul II, by buying into the religion of the Holocaust, of Holocaustianity, as opposed to Catholicism, John Paul II chose the enemies of Christ over Christ in his church. And that's just objectively true 50 years on.
You know, eventually we'll get to the point. I gotta do a lot more things on my end, but I do want to read Holocaust debunking books by Guillermo Rudolph and Carla Montoya. So like these books are out there, and I like to bring them on the show. We can talk about them, but for more of a scientific understanding of the Holocaust and how it worked and the propaganda behind it, I think that doesn't get discussed enough because a lot of it's very dense material. But you know the millions like so the history of the Jews is you know they stayed in Poland for 800 years. They moved to Russia. They took money, you know, peddling alcohol. They eventually own the all centers. Like they had a huge influence in Spain. They got kicked out. They went to the Ottoman Empire. Ended up, you know, making money, sex trafficking Eastern European women. They owned the bank.
More things change, the more they stay the same, right?
But then it's like they gather all this money by doing these different things. And it's like then they all collectivize against the Holocaust and propagandize it and put out information about it. So it's like you have to see the whole European history as just a one long money-making scheme for these people.
Right. Why Simon of Trent and William of Norwich, hundreds of miles, same thing.
Hold on, I muted myself. They did a ritual. So the holy children of, I can't think of the Spanish ritual sacrifice that was done, but it was like 1972 or 71, and that's what the investigation that ended up getting the Jews kicked out of Spain was this ritual sacrifice.
Right. So literally everywhere, the Russians talk about it. The Spaniards talk about it. The English talk about it. The Italians talk about it. That they're still there's. What are they doing in Ukraine right now? But sex trafficking Eastern European girls. They're doing it right now. And Leon DeGrell. You know, hero, poet, writer,
Catholic
father.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
What was the nunnery that he built in Spain? Do you remember what it's called? The call off the top of your head?
No, I don't actually.
Let me look it up.
That's the sort of Catholic I want to be. I want to be a Leon DeGrell Catholic. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen. Don't take my word for it. Just read it for yourself. It's easily found. You know, if you just do.
I'll link it in the show notes.
But you know, there's no believing these people who lie about this, and then try and destroy your church with the same lies.
Also, link the monastery that he helped build with his money. In the show notes too.
Yep. So a good and faithful man unto the last, trying to tell the truth as best he could. That's what finally convinced me that it wasn't true. So I hope that the listeners found something useful in this. I know that the DeGrell was devoted to Our Lady. So we'll just close with an Ave, and I'm going to thank you, Patrick, for coming on rather late tonight and knocking this out. So, Amen. Pacis Filii Spiritui Sancti. Amen. Ave Maria, gratia plena Dominus Tecum. Benedicta tu in mulieribus et benedictus fructus ventris tui, Iesus. Sancta Maria, Mater Dei, ora pro nobis peccatoribus, nunc et in hora mortis nostrae. Amen. Thank you, listeners. We'll see you next time.